Okay, so we are in Luke chapter 22. We're looking at verses 24 through 30. You all gave me some great observations. A lot of you clued into exactly what we're going to be talking about or asked questions to that nature. You guys gave me good timeless truths. Thank you for practicing those. I appreciate that. You should get in the habit of doing that when you're reading your scripture, trying to pull out the timeless truth. That's just this English 101 stuff. Right? If we do it in literature class, why can't we do it with the Bible? The Bible is literature. We should be finding out what the author is saying. Right? First audience first, second audience second. You know, these are eternal things, so it's important to know what it really means. So, Jesus says in verse 25, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority of them are called benefactors. So, this is kind of my timeless truth. That was the verse. My timeless truth is as follows. It's not succinct, and I didn't want to make it succinct for a reason. Sometimes when we chop up things, you can lose some of the meaning, so you have to be careful of that. Make it as succinct as possible without watering stuff down. So, in the world, the greatest people, exercise authority and are honored for it. But Jesus would have us follow his example as one's function and reputation should be linked to serving. So your service and your reputation, your function and reputation should be linked to serving. Right? So he would have us follow his example. So I want to ask you a question. How often do you seek to be honored? How often do you do something and you're just itching in the back room for somebody to find out, oh, I did that? Be honest. It happens with me. I'm a computer guy. I want to know, you know, when the network's running good, not just when the network's bad, right? Oh, I can't print. My email doesn't work, right? I want to hear, hey, Jason, man, the network's running awesome. Thank you, right? We want to know that. It's part of our sinful nature. You guys clued in on that on your observation. But I want you to be thinking about that, okay, as we talk, because when we draw in, we make a timeless truth for Christians today. That timeless truth that will happen that no matter what Christian, no matter what century they live in, whether they're first audience or second audience, that's going to be applicable to all of us. But then we start to bring it back home in our application, and we say, how does this affect us today, and then what am I going to do about it? So I want you to be thinking about that. Do I like to be honored? And the answer is probably going to be yes, because you're human. You're fallen human. Jesus is perfect human. So to err is not human. To err is fallen human. Jesus doesn't err. Right, and he's human. Okay, so maybe you've excelled in an area, like you're like the best at soccer. Maybe you're the best at martial arts. Maybe you're best at something. You want to be recognized. You put in a lot of work. You put in a lot of time. You want people, after you did something, to appreciate what you've done. Do you try to seek recognition for things? Is this not a natural reaction? You obviously put in all this time. And what do they do at commencement ceremonies? They recognize all of your hard work in high school, all of your hard work in college, and it's a, yay you, go you. You get this diploma, and yay, it's all right, congratulations, right? It's all about recognition. Whenever you're working hard, what do you expect after a while? You've been working at, like, Taco Bell for 6 months. You've been working really hard, you've been learning, you've been training people. What do you expect? A raise. A raise is the boss showing you appreciation, showing that, Eli, you've worked hard, we value you as an employee, we're going to give you a raise. And if you don't get a raise, then you start getting I'm going to work at Burger King. Right? Because I hear my friend Bill works at Burger King, and he gets raises, and that's being shown appreciation. Okay? Jesus actually had to address the situation, which we all recognize is like during the Last Supper time, right? Where there's a dispute over who is the greatest. How on earth does this happen? Well, the greatest is not just about the things you've done. It's also about your reputation. Okay, Peter, who would you rank out of all the apostles? Who would you rank as a better apostle?
Peter.
Why? See, we naturally go there too. How many of you thinking Bartholomew is the greatest? Love that guy. What about Thomas? Everybody hates Thomas. Okay, not hates him, but he's the least favorite, isn't he? He's doubting Thomas. How dare he doubt God, right? I'm kind of a skeptic. I don't know. If I were to put myself into Thomas's position, yes, Thomas? He was, absolutely. And he died in India. He planted churches. You know, they found churches in China. Isn't that crazy? You're like, what happened? Well, the apostles actually went all over the earth and they spread the gospel. And after a while, yeah, all the Christians were persecuted and killed and it died out. But when we're trying to push our gospel message to the ends of the earth, we don't realize sometimes that it's already reached the ends of the earth. But sometimes it's just died out. So we need to, you know, send it again. Pretty interesting. All right. So, who's the greatest? We rank in our things. I look in like, who's the greatest? I'm like, John's the greatest, man. Why? I love his gospel. I love, he wrote 1st, 2nd, 3rd John. He wrote Revelation. He went from a son of thunder to love. You just gotta love everybody, right? There's church tradition that they would carry him like on a stretcher because he's like an old man dying. And he would just be like, love one another. And you're like, what? And this guy wanted to call down fire from heaven. Would you say, Taylor? Yeah, he
died on Patmos.
He died on Patmos. Yes, he did.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. That's fine. But he was an old guy, and he was carried around, but he did die on Patmos in exile. Why did he die in exile? Why couldn't they kill him?
Because he just wouldn't die.
Tradition says he was boiled in oil and didn't die, so they exiled him, which was a favorite thing for Augustus, the regime, to do, to banish you on a super small island. Okay, Augustus banished, I think, one of his daughters on this little island that she could like barely walk around on, and that's what he did. Yeah, see you later. Hope the supply shipments come. Yeah. Well, they're Romans. If they had slaves to carry them, that might be different. So if we look, we rank apostles ourselves, so why wouldn't they rank according to what they did? Why wouldn't they? There was an inner circle. Peter, John, and James were with Jesus. Okay, I can't talk. Peter, John, and James were with Jesus. They were up and they saw the transfiguration, right? Who did he ask to come pray with him? The 11 at that point. Will you come and stay with me, Peter, John, and James? And then he comes out and not even they could stay awake. Can you not wake? Can you not pray with me an hour? What's going on, dudes? Right? So there's a ranking automatically. And what is that ranking according to? Is it according to time and effort put in? Is it how they were faithful did they obey Jesus more? Did he look on their hearts and see? I mean, what is that all about? So they're thinking, naturally, there's a pecking order. There's a hierarchy. It happens. Jesus said, hey, Peter, can you go do this for me? And then what is Bartholomew thinking? I never get asked to do that by Jesus. Right? And we're forgetting there's like 58 other disciples at this point. There's 70. 70 disciples, there's about 120 when Jesus ascends. And then like, you know, all heaven breaks loose, right, after Pentecost. Then it grows overnight. Imagine having a church, we're hanging out, we got 70 people. And then all of a sudden, like, one Sunday at the synagogue, or one Saturday at the synagogue, all of a sudden we got 3,000. Crazy. What do you do then? Right, so there's other ones. So where are they ranking themselves? What is their criteria for ranking? Maybe it's like, hey, well, I've done this. Well, hey, I've done that. Maybe it just had an innocent thing. Maybe people are harboring things and things just popped out. Why is Jesus' heart being shown here at this particular time?
Because there's bigger things that are going on, he's probably thinking.
Like, yeah, there's bigger. What bigger things, Lily? Is he kind of worried about that? What later on in the text would identify that he's kind of worried about that?
His wedding tears of blood.
He's
sweating blood.
He's sweating blood. Exactly. He's out there. He's stressed out. He's praying to God, hey, if there's any other way right now, let's just do that, okay? I really don't want to take two Roman punishments, a scourging and a crucifixion. That's huge.
Is it actually possible to sweat blood?
Yeah, it actually is. And they say that's a high level of stress. And they actually say, I don't know. You just never know. You can read anything on the internet, okay? That's why you have to say they say, because, well, some doctor somewhere, you're like, well, yeah, he's a doctor, but what's his credentials, right? I don't think we're checking credentials. I'm not. Are you checking credentials, Eli? Doctor in what? Where did you go to school? What did you major in? What did you write your thesis on, right? We don't do that. So doctors that I've heard of said that whenever Jesus got pierced, when the blood and the water came out, was actually so much stress on his heart that it was like it had like water on the heart or something like that. So he's pretty stressed. So this is what we see. So it's easy to knock the apostles, but we would be doing it too. Because inside of us, right, don't we get that way on our soccer teams? Don't we get that way in church sometimes when we think, well, why is that guy up there holding communion? Why am I? Eli's like, they never asked me to do communion. You know, then there's other people playing the piano. Why does Eli get to play the piano? I know how to play the piano. You know what I mean? In our heart, we kind of go there. And then we say, oh, no, stop. We push it down. But in our heart, we go there. And Jesus is worried about this because it's kind of the Last Supper, right? All right. So Jesus here is asking his disciples to make another paradigm shift. Let's look at verse 25. As I read earlier, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors. What do you think that means? What do you think he's talking about? Because I got you like an actual historical reference, but I want to see, what do you guys think?
Is that him saying, this is how you were thinking, but this is how I want you to think?
Yes. Yeah, and not necessarily just the apostles, just the disciples. Remember, he's God. He knows it's going to drop down to us as well. So he uses the kings of the Gentiles. Now, are the apostles Gentiles? They're Jews. So he's even saying, hey, look, this is like the great kings of old. This is what they do. What is he referring to in verse 25?
Judges.
Okay, what do you mean judges?
Like the judges from the Old Testament.
Nope. Gentiles, kings of the Gentiles. Yeah, sometimes.
Oh,
I hear you. Any other? Nope. Okay, fine. Listen, in Rome, yes, I am reading Caesar, Life of a Colossus by Adrian Goldsworthy. Okay, so it's funny how whenever you teach something and you're reading something and they're independent and then they meet.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. In Rome, there is patricians and plebes. Patricians are kind of like the nobility. The plebes are kind of the lower class people. That doesn't mean that they're the poor people, but it means they're not the nobility in Rome. Okay? So, what is expected of every patrician is that they enter into a life, a public life, where they go and serve Rome. This is expected. And they even have a track that they have to meet. You're supposed to be elected as an aedile at this age. You're supposed to hit praetor at this age. Hopefully, if you're tracking right, you're going to hit consul at this age. You have a track you're supposed to do. Go off after consul. You go and become a nice governor of a big province. Make a lot, you know, get a triumph. And you have this set career path that you have to be as one of the nobles. One of the things that you started out, when you're first starting out to do, is you get clients. You get clients. And a client is somebody that you do a favor for. Okay? Now, if I get a bunch of clients, let's just say that I start to handpick different people because you have needs and you come up to me and you say, hey, Jason, can you help me XYZ? And I go, sure, I can do that for you. And then all of a sudden you become my client. Then I start to take care of you and things. Because normally your patron is the one that is going to take care of you if you have a need. Think Godfather. Literally, that's kind of what it is. So, you are a patron and you have clients, and as a patron, you're also a client of another patron. So that's how it goes. You have people that owe you favors. This is how the public life works. Now, the republic in Rome was not like a representative republic like we have. It's not like that at all. So a senator can do whatever he wants, even though he's elected. He doesn't represent anybody. What he says goes. He is a patrician. Doesn't matter. Okay? So you have patrons. You have clients. Now, Caesar was a really cool guy. And what he did, he used his own money to build roads. He used his own money to throw parties for people. So he would recognize, oh, Abby, you're having something important here coming on. Why don't we throw you a party and I'll finance the whole thing? And you're like, dude, that's so cool. Now, he owed a lot of money to a lot of people. But see, that was also calculated. You took risks and you got enough what's called auctoritas. That means you have public favor so you can go forward. See, this is how the Roman system works. So if Aspen is my client and I'm her patron, I'm her benefactor. Do you understand? So I do something for her. I throw her a party. She has certain needs. Hey, look, I'm trying to get into this oration college, and I want to do this, that, and the other, and this has cost money. Okay, I'll foot the bill. Why? Because I'm going to ask her on a day to do me a favor. Maybe there's something that's going to come up and I have a bill that I want passed through that I'm going to say, hey, I need you and your family to vote for this bill. And you're going to go, yes, sir, we're on your side. You take care of me, I take care of you. Benefactors. This is what Jesus is talking about. When you do something for somebody, you're expecting payback. When the kings, the Gentile kings, do something nice and help other people, you see, they exercise lordship over them, and those in authority over them are called benefactors. I'm doing you a favor, but you're going to have to do me a favor later. This extended later on in the feudal system, when the lords would swear fealty to the king. And the king would say, okay, you have all this land. I'm going to ask a couple of things from you. Give me some money from that, but you get to keep the majority of it. And in time of war, I'm going to call you up, and you and your knights better be there. And if not, we're going to have some issues. Okay, yeah, bad things will happen, which did happen in history. Sometimes people didn't show up. So he's saying, look, the Gentile kings do things for people expecting return. Do we do that? Yeah. Remember whenever I say we're picking up trash, we're doing it because it needs to be done. We're not doing it to get anything back in return. Because that is our normal reaction. When I do something for you, I'm going to expect at some point that you're going to be nice to me, that you're going to send me a thank you card. You know, we have these expectations that we put in our heart, that we have in our hearts, and that we put on other people. And Jesus is saying the Gentiles do that. But verse 26, what does he tell you? But not so with you. You should not do something expecting something in return. Let the greatest among you become the youngest. In that society, the youngest person was not taken seriously. The youngest person was not somebody of renown or stature. They didn't have auctoritas. They didn't have a lot of public opinion. Their name wasn't known. When Caesar went up for the consul, he won easily. He had a name for himself. He had a lot of clients. He had a lot of auctoritas. A young person couldn't expect to do that. As a matter of fact, he ran for consul with a young person who was rich, who didn't win. He went third place, which is not winning at all. There's two consuls. Okay, the young guy didn't have enough auctoritas, even with Caesar. This other guy beat him. So he's saying, look, you need to act like you don't have a reputation like an old guy's going to have. You need to act more like you're young. Don't put stock in the reputation. Because when you're old, I'm telling you, you're going to come to me and you're going to be like, oh, you know, Lily says, I got these problems. I'm like, well, let me tell you, Lily, I've seen a lot of things in my life. And what I'm going to tell her? I'm going to tell her things from my life, and I'm going to tell her experience. I'm going to say, these are red. These are things that I've found out and blah, blah, blah. I'm going to give you my wisdom and experience. And you're like, okay, and you're going to take it or you're not going to take it. But I rely upon that. I'm proud of that. I've had problems that the Lord has got me through, that I rely upon him. I have faith in the Lord on things. Other things have nothing to do in the sense of with the Lord, but like secular things. Yeah, I know God had a plan and all that things. But what I'm saying is, look, when I put all this wisdom and all this experience and reputation, there's a pride thing there. You have an older pastor and a new pastor right out of Bible college. And then he wants to go do stuff. And the old pastor's like, pace yourself. You're going to burn out. No, I'm fine. Pace yourself. You're going to burn out. Oh, I'm going to do this stuff. And he's like, I'm burning out. And he goes, well, we did talk about this. But when you're older, you rely upon reputation. The young do not. Because the young don't need a reputation, right? You guys are invincible, right? No, you're bulletproof. Nobody can touch you. No? Good. You guys get a good head on your shoulders so far. So become as the youngest and the leader as one who serves. Now, this is a concept that's called servant leadership. Have you heard of it? Servant leadership. Leadership is there whenever you get something from your people. You have people that you, there's different leadership styles, but one of the main ones, like in the military, you have people there and they are there to serve you in some capacity. Okay? A servant leader is you are there to enable and empower each and every person. You see what I'm saying? If I own a company and it's making widgets, I'm going to hire different people and I'm going to be in charge and I have a vision. I'm going to cast a vision. I'm going to say, all you people, we're going to make widgets. We're going to make widgets this way. This is how many we're going to sell. We're going to tell everybody that our widgets are the best because they are, aren't they? Because we made them. Aren't we the best? And we're going to do this. I'm casting a vision. I'm giving you energy. I'm saying, this is what we're going to do. And whenever things, you're going to say, Eli's going to say, the widget press isn't really working really well. I'm like, okay, who knows the widget press? We need to hire somebody to make sure our widget press, that we're not slowing down production, that we're not doing these things. We're taking an active role. And what is our purpose? What is our goal? What is our mission? To make widgets so we can make money. And if Eli's getting sick or something and we're saying that Eli's not performing, I'm sorry, Eli, I'm going to have to let you go. I'm now going to hire Toby and hope Toby works out. Why? Because the mission is to make widgets and make money. Servant leadership is not about that. Servant leadership as me as a leader pouring into somebody else, and the purpose is building them up. You are the commodity. You are the product. And I must decrease, you must increase. That's servant leadership. That scene is weak. That's how I build people, because I'm a pastor and I didn't know that. I'm a network guy. Telling people, oh, Eli, let me show you how to build that router. Let me show you how to do this stuff. And what does Eli do? Eli's like, hey, boss, I know how to build routers. Okay. But Jason doesn't know anything. What? How come everybody else is getting promoted but me? Because I'm showing everybody how to do stuff because I went to computer college and I know all this stuff. And all these people are like using me, like getting ahead of the game. Everybody in my section got promoted until my boss finally pulled me over and goes, you know, I spent a lot of time with you on the Y2K project, and I realized you got a lot of project management skills. I'm like, oh, thank you. You're a really good leader. Thank you. You know, I found that you actually know how to program routers. Yep, I actually did go to computer college. Out of everybody here, I actually really went to computer college. Wow. You know, that's not what everybody told me. You know, everybody else told me that you didn't know how to program routers, that you were obstinate, that you didn't want to go help other people out. That all these things, X, Y, Z, the list goes on and on. And I'm like, no. He's like, but you know what I found? I found the exact opposite of what everybody's saying. That you know what you're doing, that you're professional, that you know how to design networks, that you know more about servers and about the email than the guy who's in charge of the servers and emails right now. Yeah, that's because I told him how to do it. I'm going to promote you based on my time with you. I'm like, thank you. 2 weeks later, I quit. And that wasn't anything personal. I was very touched by that, and I told him that. I said, I kind of want to move to Coeur d'Alene and not live in Reno anymore. So that's what he goes, okay, I get it. Coeur d'Alene's beautiful. I've been there. No biggie. But I poured myself into my colleagues to help them out. And it was to my detriment. But that's what servant leadership is. This is what Jesus is asking us to do. I did that naturally. I didn't plan that. I didn't sit there and think, I'm going to tell my friend Danny all this stuff when he asked me all these questions. I'm not going to just like tell him this because he's going to put in a good word with me with the boss. I didn't do that. I did it because it was the right thing to do, because I enjoy teaching, because I enjoy helping people, I enjoy bettering people, I enjoy honing them into the person that they want to be. I like to develop leaders. I like to develop people into the best that they can be. It's part of my spiritual gifting. Jesus is asking his apostles, his disciples, to be servant leaders. He says, for who is greater, in verse 27, who is the greater, one who reclines at table or one who serves? Now think about this. Think about this. This verse may be confusing, but think about restaurant. Who is greater? The waiter? The waitress who says, what would you like to order? Or the person who is telling the waitress what to order? Whose scene is greater? Person who's giving the orders. Right? That's what he's saying. Who's reclining at table, if you have the ESV? Who's sitting down and eating? Or the one who serves? He says, is not the one who reclines at table. And you're like, yeah, duh. Going to a restaurant. The guy's dropped. What do? You tip the server. The server's there to make money, right? If you're going to, like, dockside, you're like, dang straight, those people are greater than the servants. And the servants are like, hey, what can we do for you? I'm looking for that tip. I hope you tip 20%. That would be awesome, because you just threw down a lot of money on this meal, right? He says, so it's the one, is it not the one who reclines at table? He says, but, answering this question, verse 27, but I am among you as one who serves. I am the Messiah. They didn't necessarily connotate this, but he is God incarnate, and he came down to serve. So, who's the greatest? Jesus. What did he do? Served. We would see service as a menial task. People who pick up our garbage, people who clean out our sewers. Oh, I wouldn't want to do that. Oh, you do that. Oh, you clean out garbage. Oh, there's something dirty about you. I promise I won't break your guitar. Oh. But then the guy's laughing all the way to the bank because he's like, I'm making a lot of money. Because nobody wants to clean out your sewer. So I'm making a lot of money. I'm like, yeah, but you still smell. Okay. Woo. He's saying, look, I am God and I'm serving. You serve as well. The expectation is reputation. I have experience. I'm better than you. I have more experience. There's no question. Anybody in this room, I'm better at computers than you. Why? I held a Cisco certification. I hold like 5 Microsoft certifications. I've been doing computers since I was 19 years old, trained in the Air Force, starting in mainframes and minis. So you're like, what? Because I can just throw out my resume and it's like, boom. My resume is 7 pages long. Remember how they say keep it to 1 page? Forget that. It's like, you know, all my certifications, my education, and like page of experience. And I'm like, I'm better at you than computers because I have more experience. I'm older than you. It doesn't mean I'm smarter than Trevor because Trevor knows computers. He may know stuff I don't, but I can say I'm better overall because I'm older. Jesus is saying, nope, you need to take the attitude of the younger. Don't cop an attitude like I know all this stuff. I've been there. Trevor, let me tell you what to do. Let's not get this condescending attitude. I'm not going to help Trevor so I can get something out of it. I help Trevor because I'm there to help. A counselor is there to counsel people. He's not there to get something out of it. People who help people are there to help people, not there to get something out of it. The world will try to get something out of it. You do a good thing, you can't wait to tell people. That's all the world has. That's what Jesus says. The Gentiles, known for the many prayers. La 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 la. Okay, they have their moment, they have their glory. They're out there praising, everybody's looking, going like, oh, look at him, he's a great orator. You have your praise, you just got your praise. Go to your Father who's in secret, pray to him who's in secret, and he will reward you openly. You're not in it because you're going to get something. Now, I know we say we have an inheritance and all that stuff, but you're not even supposed to do it because you get the inheritance. You have the inheritance because of who you are as a child of God. You're adopted. That's part of the whole atonement process. You continue on because you have an inheritance. You're looking forward to Jesus because you have an inheritance. When things get bad, you're like, look, I have an eternal inheritance with Jesus. That's what you look forward to. You don't do it because of the rewards. Jesus says no. You don't do it because you have a patron-client relationship. You do it because I did it, and I expected nothing in return. Did he get anything from us? What did he get from us? Did he get a piece of gum from us? He got nothing from us. He says the Son of Man has no place to lay his head at night. The foxes have holes. The birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to go at night. He gave everything. This is the paradigm shift. If you want to be the greatest among you, you will become the servant of all. That's what it says in Mark. I got a little plaque of it in my office. I have that. My friend got that for me because he thought it was cool. I have it to remind myself that I'm an old guy and I have a lot of experience. And I went to Bible college, and I took Greek classes, and I can pray some stuff in Hebrew, and I really love history, and sometimes that just fits perfectly into a lesson like it did tonight. But I'm not the greatest, because the greatest is the person who serves and takes on God's character. That's what God wants. He wants Lily. He wants her to light up and, like, God's character, beam, and that's like a bright, shining light in the midst of darkness. And then people are like, what? Nobody does that. What do you want, Lily? Nothing. Why are you helping these people? Because they need help. You're not getting anything out of it? No. I didn't think that I could get anything out of it. I'm doing it because that's the attitude we need to have right there. That's what Jesus is talking about. You want to be the greatest in the kingdom of heaven, you become the servant of all. I'm almost done. I've totally blown 20 minutes. I want you to distinguish between something. Jesus is not saying sacrifice everything so people can have some things. I want you to be able to discern what a need is. And the reason why I say this is not so you can hold back and not so you have an out so you can be, okay, I can be stingy in this area. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that there needs to be some discernment as well. Because you can starve, Thomas. You can give away your lunch. You can give away all your money that you had to feed yourself because you're feeding all these people that already have money and already have food. And you're just trying to give just to be a servant person. And that's not what Jesus is saying. You need to recognize needs. Distinguish between a need, a want, and a desire. Jesus didn't say provide for everybody's desires. I want a Lamborghini. And then Eli's dropping dead working so Aspen can get a Lamborghini. And it's like, why are you doing that? Because Jesus said to be the servant of all. And you're like, okay. Jesus didn't say drop everything to provide for somebody's wants. I would really want that. That's cool. He says needs. So if you see somebody who is in need, not really, really wants a new car, not like, oh, that's cool. I got a silver car. I really want it black. So I'm really saving up for a paint job. Well, let me help you with the paint job. Come on. That's a want. If they're going without food at night, ding, light bulb, right? That's what you need to help with. We are in America. Sometimes we have this weird thing that it's hard for us to help sometimes because sometimes we don't know how to help. You're driving by, you see somebody on the side of the road. What do? Do you pull over and help them like the old days? I would advise no woman do that. I'm just telling you, okay? You have cell phone, pull over, call the police. I'm at this, blah, blah, blah. There's somebody stuck, right? There's other ways to help. Be creative about it, all right? A lot of times, they have a cell phone, and you see by, and they're already on the phone calling mom, dad, or brother, or sister, or their tow truck, and they're waiting for it. I'm not giving you an out. Be smart. Because how many centuries of Christians have said, you know, oh, we've done all these things, and people have learned to take advantage of Christians. Okay? So here's the thing. I'm not saying not to help somebody, and you look at somebody, you're like, well, I don't know if they're just going to go buy liquor with it. Okay, I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is this. You have 10 bucks in your pocket, right? You walk by, and we're going to pick on Nisha. Nisha's there, and, you know, she looks like she has a need. Maybe she's holding up a sign like, oh, no, I'm stranded. And you're like, oh, here's 10 bucks, boom. Then you walk by, and you see Aspen, not holding up a sign, but she's in dire need of something that she could have really used the 10 bucks, but you gave your 10 bucks away because you weren't a good steward of it. Be a good steward. Don't use it as an excuse not to give. You get these things. I'm telling you, I've done this before. You get these checks in your spirit. And you have to overcome your bias. Because you hold the sign up and your instant thought is they're panhandling, they make more money. I mean, it's like what? I read a news article where some dude, they identified he made like $200 in a day just by panhandling, by holding up, will work for food, but doesn't really want a job, just wants a thing, right? Identify needs. You're not asked to provide for wants or desires, needs. But be ready, because God will ask you to provide for a need sometime, and be ready to do that. Hold, as Pastor Steve says, hold loosely onto your stuff. If somebody wants something, be willing to give it. Sunday, and I'll end. Sunday, I'm walking to the back to go sit down because I ask Josh every Sunday, which I don't know, I guess we have to ask you now, Ethan, for a seat because it's impossible to find a seat. So I'm like, save me a seat, please. Okay. So I'm walking back, and Jacob Robison has borrowed some reading glasses from me before. And he says, do you have your glasses? Mine are broke. And I'm like, I got LASIKs. I actually really need them now. I literally can't see. So I'm like, all right. So I thought about it for a second. And I'm like, just give him your glasses, dude. So I said, here you go. He said, how do I get these back to you? I'm like, just throw them at me when you're done. Okay, cool. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know what? I can do this nice thing for him. I've preached through Philippians, okay? Pastor Steve has the stuff on the projector, right? I don't really need him. He has a need. Okay, fine. He needs to see. That's fine. Little sacrifices. But even something that little will cause a check in your heart. I really need them to see. Oh, no, actually, I don't need them to see. Right? He does. So, distinguish between needs. And realize that service may not always take the form of material needs. That's an easy thing. But sometimes they need your time. Sometimes they need your energy. Sometimes they need a shoulder to cry on. Sometimes they need somebody to listen. Be there and be able to identify. And know when you're out of your depth. Know when you need to tap out and get help. I don't know how many youth people, I was going to point at Natalie, but I don't think I've ever had that talk with her. We've had youth leaders like, and then the student's like, problems. And the youth leader's like, I'm drowning. Oh, no. Oh, my, they threw all this stuff at me. What do I do? And I'm like, you can't take on their problems. Calm down. You're not a licensed counselor. Okay. Is there anything illegal going on that you have to report? No. Okay. Then just pray with them. Know when you're out of your depth. It's not always material needs, okay? Sometimes it's time. Sometimes it's energy. Recognize needs. Be available. And you know what? If you're not being put into physical harm, give it a shot. And you can always say, oh, well, I helped somebody that didn't really need it, okay? Unless you're in physical harm. Ladies, do not help somebody who's pulled over. Do you understand? Well, I'm going to do it. No. Don't put yourself in harm's way, all right? I would just say no. Yeah, I would just say no.
A weapon is more reliable than a boyfriend.
Okay, let's move on. Okay. In closing, I want you guys to write this down, all right? Okay. Oftentimes, when you're serving somebody in finality, it's using your gifting. So helping to understand your gifting is teaching, counseling, encouraging, helping, administering, spiritual, shepherding, those things. Let's turn to Hebrews really quick. Hebrews 12, 1 and 2 says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Jesus' example, what we get at the end, is helping you to keep going. It's not, oh, I get rewarded.
I got eternal life because I helped the old lady across the street.
No, you helped the old lady across the street because that's God's character, and you're reflecting God's character. So I want you to think this week. Okay? I want you to think this week. Our actions and our reputation must be aligned with the character of God. He is the greatest, and when we act like him, then that shines forth. How often do you serve others? How often do you serve their needs above your own wants and desires? How often do you seek recognition for what you should? I want you to consider this week the words of Jesus, okay? How can you best serve others? Let's pray. Father, we thank you so much for this day. We thank you for this time together. We thank you for this passage. We thank you for your words. We thank you for the joy, the mercy, the grace, all the things that you impart to our hearts. Help us to feel that joy this week. Help us to be able to share the hope that is inside of us with other people whenever they ask it. Help us to preach the gospel at all times, and if necessary, let us use words, as Francis Assisi says, Lord. Help us to reflect upon you and your glory, and just help us to be able to serve others and the way you want us to. In the name of Jesus, amen.